Who at the time could foresee how Vespasian would reject so enormous a request as the sparing of Jerusalem? This difficult decision, perhaps the most difficult question in Jewish history, Rabbi Yochanan had to decide by himself without consultation with colleagues, in a fleeting moment. He was therefore never certain that he had decided correctly. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 88. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai escapes Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. One of the most enduring scenes in American literature is the end of Moby Dick, in which Ishmael the sailor, the last surviving member of the crew of the doomed and destroyed Pequod, flounders in the stormy sea until he suddenly grabs hold of a floating box that allows him to survive until his rescue. This box, Herman Melville explains, was a coffin from the ship's hold, and it is this embodiment of death that bears Ishmael to life. Melville's literary language is noteworthy. Quote, "Owing to its great buoyancy, rising with great force, the coffin life buoy, shot lengthwise from the sea, fell over and floated by my side. Buoyed up by that coffin for almost one whole day and night, I floated on a soft and dirge-like mane. The unharming sharks, they glided by as if with padlocks on their mouths. The savage seahawks sailed with sheathed beaks. On the second day, a sail drew nearer and picked me up at last." End quote. A coffin life buoy bearing someone surrounded by so much danger to safety and life. It is Rabbi Norman Lamb who noted that this image has a Talmudic forebear, the famous tale of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who, exquisitely aware of the fact that Jerusalem was doomed and that the temple would be destroyed, had himself smuggled out of the besieged city in a deathbed or coffin so that he could found an academy in Yavne, pretending to be dead so that Judaism could live on. To return to this story is to discover one of the great heroes of Jerusalem and of Judaism who saved the Jewish faith in his actions moments before Jerusalem fell. Rabbinic literature has several versions of Rabbi Yochanan's escape from Jerusalem, but since they all involve an audience with Vespasian, we could date the event to 69 CE, for that marked what is known as the Year of Four Emperors, when Nero committed suicide in response to a revolt, when two other emperors immediately followed, and when many legions rallied around Vespasian, bringing him to the throne. Rabbi Yochanan, certain Jerusalem would fall, prepared to act on behalf of Jewish continuity, Judaic continuity, and to ensure the memory of Jerusalem outside Jerusalem. But why was Rabbi Yochanan so sure of Jerusalem's defeat? Had not the sacred city been miraculously saved in the past? The answer begins with the civil war suffusing the city. As we have seen, Jewish hatred for fellow Jews, even more than Rome, destroyed ancient Jerusalem. And Yochanan ben Zakkai, seeing a Jerusalem where Jews slaughtered Jews, sensed that it would fall because such a Jerusalem, he believed, where Jews shed the blood of fellow Jews and burned the food of fellow Jews, was not a Jerusalem that deserved God's miraculous salvation. Then there is the fact that Rabbi Yochanan seemed to predict that Vespasian would be emperor, and we can theorize, as I mentioned in both my statesmanship and the Pirkei Avot lectures, that Rabbi Yochanan believed that this rise of Vespasian to the throne would bring about a brutal assault on Jerusalem by Vespasian's successor as general, his son Titus. In order to understand why this is so, we must review a bit of Roman history. The historian Martin Goodman has noted that several years before the year 70, the notion of Vespasian as an all-powerful emperor who founded an imperial dynasty would have been unthinkable. In fact, as Goodman writes, quote, "Vespasian had been appointed in 66 by Nero to command the Roman forces against the rebellious Jews, partly because of his political insignificance. The son of a tax farmer, he was in his late 50s and had enjoyed a worthy but not a brilliant career." And he adds, "Nero could not brook the elevation of another successful general who might be a threat to his own security. Instead, he preferred to entrust the control of three legions for the Judean War to Vespasian, precisely because he was a competent mediocrity. That such a man might become emperor without breeding or contacts among the aristocracy was unimaginable." End quote. Goodman further argues that it is because of this fact that Vespasian, upon being presented the opportunity to take the throne, needed a huge win in Judea. As he continues, quote, "Suddenly in July 69, the commander of Roman forces against Jerusalem was no longer an obscure senator of mediocre talent and minimal prestige in the court of the emperor." End quote. At this point, Goodman writes, "Vespasian, quote, urgently needed the gloss of foreign conquest, the surest foundation of authority for a Roman politician. for him to be portrayed in the Capitol as warrior hero and savior of the state, end quote. For Goodman, this is why Titus's assault on Jerusalem was so brutal. He needed a victory and he needed it fast. And perhaps Rabbi Yochanan understood that Jerusalem would not only be defeated, but that it would burn, and that he, Rabbi Yochanan, had to act to preserve the spiritual leadership of Judaism from the city. All this, reading between the lines, can be discerned in the rabbinic story of the escape. Here is one translation of the Babylonian Talmud's description of the story, where Rabbi Yochanan contacts a relative of his who is a member of the Zealots. Quote, Rabbi Yochanan sent him saying, come to visit me privately. When he came, he said to him, how long are you going to carry on in this way and kill all the people with starvation? He replied, what can I do? If I say a word to them, they will kill me. He said, devise some plan for me to escape. Perhaps I shall be able to save a little. He said to him, pretend to be ill and let everyone come to inquire about you. Bring something evil smelling and put it by you so that they will say you are dead. Let then your disciples get under your bed, but no others, so that they shall not notice that you are still light, since they know that a living being is lighter than a corpse. He did so. And Rabbi Eliezer went under the bier from one side and Rabbi Joshua from the other, end quote. In other words, two students of Rabbi Yochanan bier him on a coffin or deathbed out of Jerusalem. The rabbi was taken to see the general, and just as Josephus claimed to have done, Rabbi Yochanan predicts to Vespasian the latter's rise to the throne. The translation of the Talmudic story continues, quote, when he reached the Romans, he said, peace to you, O king, peace to you, O king. He, Vespasian, said, your life is forfeit on two counts. One, because I am not a king, and you call me king. And again, if I am a king, why did you not come to me before now? He replied, as for your saying that you are not a king, in truth you are a king, since if you were not a king, Jerusalem would not be delivered into your hand. At this point, a messenger came to him from Rome saying, up, for the emperor is dead and the notables of Rome have decided to make you head, end quote. Vespasian was impressed at Rabbi Yochanan's prediction and offered to grant him whatever the rabbi wished. The Talmud continues with Vespasian saying as follows, quote, I am now going and will send someone to take my place. You can, however, make a request of me and I will grant it. He, meaning Rabban Yochanan, said to him, give me Yavna and its wise men and the family chain of Rabban Gamliel and physicians to heal Rabbi Tzadok, end quote. These are the three requests that Rabbi Yochanan puts forward to Vespasian, and we must briefly unpack them. The first is the most famous. Give me Yavna and its wise men, meaning allow me to establish an academy outside Jerusalem where Torah study in the Sanhedrin will find continuity. Another request was give me physicians for Rabbi Tzadok. This was a sage who had been fasting for Jerusalem's salvation, and Rabbi Yochanan's request for Rabbi Tzadok's healing was an admission that Jerusalem would not now be saved. And then there is the third request. Give me the family chain of Rabban Gamliel. This is the descendant of Hillel and of King David, who would still lead the Sanhedrin. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan received permission from Vespasian for the allowing of the political continuity of the Davidic line and thereby of the memory of Jerusalem itself. That is the Talmudic story. But upon achieving Vespasian's favor, should not Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai have asked for more? According to one Talmudic account, the great sage Rabbi Akiva later criticized Rabbi Yochanan for not going for broke, for not asking from Vespasian that Jerusalem be spared. But Rabbi Yochanan, we are told, thought that this would surely have been denied. Hauntingly, however, we are further told in the Talmud that on his actual deathbed, Rabbi Yochanan wept, saying, quote, now that there are two paths open before me, one leading to paradise and one to hell, and I do not know by which of them they are taking me, should I not weep, end quote. Commentators on this passage have had difficulty with the premise that a sage as righteous as Rabbi Yochanan would have so much to fear in facing his maker. But Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik has suggested that Rabbi Yochanan was thinking back to the day when the emperor offered to grant any request, and on his deathbed, Rabbi Yochanan was wondering whether he had acted correctly or whether Rabbi Akiva was right after all. As Rabbi Soloveitchik put it, quote, who at the time could foresee how Vespasian would reject so enormous a request as the sparing of Jerusalem? This difficult decision, perhaps the most difficult question in Jewish history, Rabbi Yochanan had to decide by himself without consultation with colleagues in a fleeting moment. He was therefore never certain that he had decided correctly. And Rabbi Soloveitchik adds, how many restless nights and sorrow-filled days ensued for Rabbi Yochanan because of this doubt? We cannot even imagine it, end quote. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan was tormented by the question of whether he made the correct decision. We believe today he did, that he saved Judaism, and as we will see, he ensured thereby not only that the Jewish faith would live on, but also that its practices would be structured in a way that Jerusalem was never forgotten. Strikingly, in his last moments on his deathbed, Rabbi Yochanan is supposed to have said that he saw Hezekiah, king of Israel, coming to escort him. Hezekiah was the leader of biblical Jerusalem that was saved from Assyria. The implication, perhaps, is that Hezekiah was arriving in order to honor a man who, in his own way, had also helped save Jerusalem. Ambassador Yaakov Herzog once spoke about his father, the first chief rabbi of the state of Israel, whose faith in the future of the Jewish state was maintained even in the face of the Holocaust. Ambassador Herzog said about his father as follows, quote, "He, the last spiritual leader of the destruction, remembered the first leader of the same destruction. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who before his death almost 2,000 years ago instructed his disciples to prepare a throne for Hezekiah, king of Judah, as a tangible symbol of faith that the kingdom of Israel would surely be restored. In the same way," said Herzog, "my father of blessed memory found the strength to soothe a bereaved people from one end of the earth to the other with the assurance of consolation and approaching salvation. If his body was bowed by the agony of his people, his soul looked forward with absolute confidence to redemption." End quote. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was certain of Jerusalem's destruction, but also of its ultimate redemption, and he sought to serve as the link between the two. Looking back at the conclusion of Melville's Moby Dick, I noticed for the first time the significance of the novel's last sentence. The ship that picked up Ishmael from the sea was called the Rachel, and it was looking for one of its own boats. Thus the novel ends by describing a ship called Rachel that, quote, "in her retracing search after her missing children, only found another orphan," end quote. This seems to be a biblical reference to the matriarch Rachel, who is described by Jeremiah as weeping for her children. To Rachel, Jeremiah promises, "Veshavu banim ligvulam," your children will return to their borders. Rabbi Lam was right. The coffin of Ben Zakkai bore Judaism to life. And we will see soon how this great sage ensured right before Jerusalem fell that the spirit of Jerusalem would never die. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, wishing you a luminous Chanukah, signing off.